Yep, babies, we do have a specialty Candyland.
Your podcast with a little bit of Brazilian coffee. Café.
Hello everyone, this is Kelly Stein again, right straight from Brazil. Today in a very special place. We are in the middle of Minas Gerais state. We are in Guaxupé. We are covering Cup of Excellence and I have a special guest today. And we are not going to talk about Arabica, right, Valentina?
No.
So, I already talked about high quality Conilon that is produced in Espírito Santo state. I already recorded an episode in English about it with Silvio Leite. You should check it out before this conversation that I'm going to have. The episode that I recorded with Silvio explains a bold project where Conilon, specialty Conilon, is being cultivated in Espírito Santo. And it's really interesting to give you an overview. But, well, let's admit, it brings the perspective from the producer, from a Brazilian guy who wants that this culture grows a lot. What would be the perspective from a buyer, especially from Europe? For this reason, I invited Valentina
Moksunova.
Yes, good. Straight from Russia. She bought some coffee, right? Some Conilon, specialty Conilon from Brazil. And she will share her perspective today with us. But right after our espresso moment.
As you may have noticed, our content is available on Spotify with episodes in both Portuguese and in English mixed together. If you're listening to our podcast for the first time, I highly recommend scrolling down and searching through the other episodes. Some people may get confused with the podcast's numbers. The episodes in English are not translation from the Portuguese ones. They have different contents. Therefore, each new episode gets its own number regardless of its language. I also would like to invite you to do a listening marathon and tell me what you like the most. Send me some doubts, questions, and I will respond during the next episode in English. Your opinion means a lot to me. Please leave your comments on Coffea website at portalcoffea.com. PORTALCOFFEA.com. If you're interested in learning about Brazilian coffee and why not breaking some preconceptions about the biggest coffee producer in the world, well, Coffea can be a good start. Quickly changing the subject, right after harvest, a season starts when international buyers come to Brazil searching for unique lots for coffee beans. Right after harvest, a season starts when international buyers come to Brazil searching for unique lots of coffee beans. So if you're listening this episode now and you're in Brazil in November 2019, don't miss the International Coffee Week, which takes place in Belo Horizonte, Minas Gerais state. The biggest coffee event in Brazil brings an intense program with workshops, debates, the Brazilian Barista Brewers Cup and Cup Tasters Championships. That's a lot of going on and different from other international coffee shows. You can find hundreds of producers walking on floor at the Coffee Week. This is a great opportunity to meet them, know their story, and engage in real direct trade. Coming back to today's episode, it highlights the impact of fine robustas and conilons in the market and how producers are investing in this very specific segment. This episode was recorded at the 2018 Cup of Excellence with Valentina Maksunova from the Hummingbird Roastery in Russia. My suggestion from the bottom of my heart, listen to this episode and open your mind and your heart for these coffees. Why not reconsider your preconceived notions of specialty, quality, and try a fine cup of Conilon and Robusta.
Welcome, Valentina. It's really nice to have you here with Coffea.
Cool, thanks.
So can you explain your experience with coffee? How long are you in this road? What you're doing in Russia? Where can people find you?
So I think I better say some brief numbers to let general know who I am. For now, it's already 12 years of me working with coffee in general, of which 7 years since 2011, I have been importing green coffee to Russia. And since the very beginning, it was, first we did not actually realize what exactly we are doing, maybe like many, many, many professionals in the industry.
Yes.
And luckily, it happened that the very first box of coffee, container of coffee we bought was a container of Brazil. So it was some kind of coincidence, maybe because the market was super high. I will never forget, it was 2011 and the market was about 300 cents per pound. Pretty high. And we just, that was the only coffee we could afford with all our savings we had at that point of time. And yeah, now I'm really happy it was Brazil by choice. Secondly, it was the biggest volume we were selling as roasters. So that was the reason why we chose to begin with Brazil.
What is the name of your company?
Oh, sorry. Now, yes, who I am. So now the company I founded myself in 2011 is called Hummingbird Coffee, Colibri Café.
Cute.
In Portuguese, it's Beija Flor.
Yes.
So any name.
Guys, she's almost Brazilian already.
Well, depending on who's listening to us, I hope the rest of the world, so no need to apply my Portuguese. And today we import coffee from at least three countries FOB, that is Brazil, Colombia, and Ethiopia. And also we are buying some smaller lots through our friends in the Netherlands, and thus we are adding El Salvador's, Nicaragua's, Kenya's, and other countries to our portfolio.
Perfect. What is the volume you're buying per year?
Well, Hummingbird is not about volume, it's about quality. And you cannot reproduce quality in huge volumes. In total, we are approaching, I would say, 10 containers of specialty a year, which is not much if you look at the business of imports of green coffee as the volume-oriented business, which is connected to margins. It is normally believed that it has to be small margin plus great volume so that you could survive. Not in our case, unfortunately. But we are trying to add as much value as possible. I'm currently an AST trainer, also, of course, a Q grader, made it 3 years ago.
Cup of Excellence judge, too.
Cup of Excellence judge. This is my third Cup of Excellence, and I feel this is the thing I need to keep doing. That's a very good thing. And also, we have a special project called Roasters Village, which is aimed at, first of all, educating roasters and baristas, but we also teach them to work together. And what is most important, every year it is held in a different city outside Moscow. It's not a capital-oriented project. Thus, we want to support the roasteries outside in regions to raise their to support them and to help them be more reliable in the eyes of their own customers to keep developing in the local markets. So we used to we began in 2014 in Tver. I don't know. Your fans can begin searching the map of Russia to find where that is.
Yes, for sure. I want to be in this camp as well.
So it's okay, guys. Listen, this is Tver, wherever it is. Omsk, in the middle of Siberia, Bryansk, close to the border with Ukraine, Belgorod, also more or less same for those who have no idea of the size of Russia. And this year we are going to Izhevsk, which is also in the direction of Ural Ridge, where we make Kalashnikov, the famous guns.
Oh, okay.
Kalashnikov and best coffees in that area.
I'm kind of confused.
It's funny you're talking about quality, training, studying, qualification, not quantity, but quality. And all of a sudden, people are listening to you talking about Conilon. So how did Conilon reach you?
Well, shock is exactly what we need. Actually, quality is not... there are so many preconceptions, so many beliefs and superstitions about what is what. And you have to be careful with that if you want to be in the front edge of the market. Why I especially mentioned about this Roasters Village project. So last year, one of the key events in the Roasters Village project is that we serve coffees we make in the real production to real customers in a real coffee shop and ask for their feedback. And last year, when I brought Lucas from Espírito Santo University, Lucas Lousada Pereira, he brought a sample of Conilon and four samples of Arabica fermentation. We had four teams of roasters, and in round one, we gave them each team one sample of Arabica.
But you didn't tell, or did you tell?
Well, yes, in round one, we told them, okay, so this is natural fermentation, this is lactic fermentation, this is that.
But it didn't say Conilon or Arabica?
No, they knew the round one was Arabica.
Ah, okay.
And actually, they had no idea of what is going to be in round two. It was a surprise. And to make everybody, to let everyone be in equal situation, we gave exactly the same coffee, and that was Conilon, to all teams. That was their job for the day. And you can't imagine how happy they were. Happy. to find out. The rest of the day, they will be dealing with cornelon. Well, to be fair, even Lucas himself, when he brought the sample of cornelon, he didn't treat it properly as we would treat Arabica because it wasn't sorted from defects, normal defects. So some of the time, all of the teams had to spend just cleaning it. But then they roasted the coffee, each team chose their own profile, and then we served this coffee to final customers asking for feedback and not actually introducing the coffee as cornelon. So that was the idea. And what is most important, what surprised me and let me think of it, okay, remember your own markets. It's already, again, 12 years in the industry, and 12 years I've been listening to the basic idea that we don't like acidity and we love cornelon because we love cornelon, or blends with cornelon. If you look at the sales of what is actually sold to this kind of customers, is that they are ready to pay a lot of money for the coffee because of the taste. It's us roasters who know what costs what. Final customers have no idea of what exactly is the price there in that bag of coffee. And in the roaster's village, we discovered that customers love cornelon, and some, I mean, they loved that flavor they were served. And one of them was even insisting on selling the sample to him, which never happened with the best top Arabicas we served the day before.
Wow. So that's a lot.
That was inspiring, you know? That's a straight answer to your question. Does it have any future? Yes, it does.
I'm just amazed. I didn't know about this experience that you did. And Professor Lucas, he was there giving lectures.
Yes, so his idea, the idea about Roasters Village is that we have their professionals, and the further it goes, the more professional people are coming to join the Roasters Village. And he was giving lectures about science, how the flavors we are getting in different types of fermentation, where they come from. So that was the idea. And by the way, he just brought this example of cornelon.
And how did you meet him? How was the process of getting in touch of this specialty cornelon?
The real truth from the very beginning?
Of course, we are all about truth.
Well, actually, also, everything is by chance. Everything is good chances in our life. I visited Enrique Sloper, the famous guy who's also coming to us next week for the Roasters Village. I was sitting in his farm and talking about something. Arabicas, his splendid, nice fermentations, wave honeys, the biodynamic stuff. And he said, well, you know, we have some young crazy professor just around the corner there in the Velanova Domigranci in the IFES. And tomorrow they are having maybe 300, he said, coffees. They are having some experiment. He's writing a paper about Q-grading and coffees. Would you like to join? And the funny fact that the next morning I had the flight. So it was like 2 o'clock, I had the flight. And I said, so how many cups can we have? Well, from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., maybe one or two flights. And they said, sure, it doesn't matter when it actually begins. I need to be there. So that's how we met Lucas.
For those who doesn't know, Henrique Sloper, he is from Espírito Santo, Venda Nova do Grand City, and he was a Cup of Excellence winner last year, and he won with a biodynamic coffee. Professor Lucas, I will leave all the links in the post in the website of coffee so you can check. Professor Lucas, he is a coffee scientist, and he's usually actually working at Instituto Federal do Espírito Santo. I can also leave all his contacts in our website. Very good. So you tried those cornelons, and what did you find? What was your first impression?
Well, the impression of cornelon in the Roasters Village was, by the way, one of the impressions which is very frequent on the tables we have in Arabicas too. There is a certain... Lucas' idea was to apply Arabica's style of fermentation to cornelon to achieve some new flavors. And at that point of time, the sample he brought was about, I call it to myself, Jack Daniels. So a lot of alcohol, whiskey notes, nutty, well, most of Brazil is nutty, but it had some spirit in it that made it warming and attractive. No acidity, no screaming bright stuff, but really just pleasant and interesting.
It's really interesting. I already visited some cornelon farms over there in that state, and basically what they did, it was organizing the steps. So first step, they were applying all the machinery and quality procedures that Arabica guys were applying to their cornelon. So quality already jumped just for this change.
I think I just need to add a little bit to those of your guests and friends to realize what is actually going on with the cornelon and why it tastes like what it tastes. Because if any...
Please!
Yes, if any of us recalls the first impression of cornelon, it's mainly woody, well, let alone defects, because normally it's full of it. It's normally just woody and no acidity there, broadly sweet, but a very specific type of sweetness.
Flavors are not well developed?
It's hard to speak of flavors, and the reason is, when I went to one of the farms, one of the typical farms, Lucas took me there just in August, I noticed that the cherry itself, I chewed the cherry, tried the cherry from the tree. It's like a turbo chewing gum, a peachy chewing gum full of flavors. Yes, the pulp itself is very thin, but it's delicious and it's way sweeter to me than Arabica. I'm sorry, guys.
Seriously?
But what happens next? And then they take this to their processing mill, which has no patio. No meaning no patio. They take all these coffees and put it straight into the drying drum, the huge drum, and dry it within 24 hours.
This is in the past, right?
I have no idea of the past, but I know that Arabicas are normally several days and people are speaking of way longer processes. And for those of you who know the correlation between the speed of roast and the flavor and the, also the way the coffee behaves in storage, there is a direct link. So the faster we dry it, the less flavors we get and the less durable the coffee is in the storage.
True.
After that, they never use any grain pros, they do pour sorting, and that's how it tastes, just simple wood, which is only probably left, exactly what is left in the cell. And on this, all the studies also are based. What is studied and learned about Cornelon is based on that kind of product, not what it can be.
That's so true.
So
that's why I like to do the joke. Don't treat as Arabica who is treating you like Robusta.
I think this joke will no longer make any sense.
I hope so.
So this is what Venturim, for example, Fazenda Venturim, the lot which I bought, they are doing. They are treating Cornelon as Arabica. And they actually are doing some very simple things many farmers can begin doing. But the basic problem is that their mindset, they have been educated to do what they do by many, many years of repeating the same thing and trying to reach their, to gain their income by just selling huge volumes. Not even trying maybe to think of diversifying that.
Or making more money, betting in quality, right?
Well, it not really depends on them only. I do understand that, because if you don't have the demand, it's really hard to try to do it from the supply side. But what I'm trying to do when I bought this lot, okay.
How big was this lot?
They are spreading their lots into micro lots, just like many Arabica guys do. And I was there cupping their coffees. One of them reminded me of a very, very nice 90 plus coffee.
Wait. Repeat. 90 plus?
90 plus.
Oh my goodness.
Well, let's be careful here. Every time you are making decisions in the farm, you have to remember why that happens. So I do need to double check it when it actually arrives into my warehouse.
Oh, true. Yeah.
But I am sure that it won't get that much down anyway. What is important, it did have flavor like raisins, like rum, like spices. So there is a lot to talk about in that coffee. And my first impression was like, whoa, it could be a three-digit number in the price. But definitely not today, not for a coffee called Cornelon, you know, this steel thing in the head, which doesn't let us dream that far. But anyway, the lot itself was about maybe 30 bags. I'm always in trouble converting bags, like 60 kg bags of coffee before hulling into what it ends up when they finish it for export. And it's right now in the customs in St. Petersburg going through formalities.
The actual market for that, for us there, it's really tough. They are paying less than the cost of the coffee for us. So it doesn't make sense for us to keep at the activity and to keep producing. So that's why we started to work with specialty coffee to try to reach another markets who would pay more for this coffee. One thing we should point here is that even the big industry are looking with a very good care with the specialty market. They are very interested on it. But for them it's very hard, because it's a big company. It's like to turn around a big vessel. So it's really, really slow. And they can't focus on very single lot like this. So in your case, in the case of the small roasters, it's more like a jet ski. So you can turn around and turn another way, another direction. It's really fast. So it's better for us to split this in many, many small roasters. So for us is a better approach. And I think this way people will know more about our job and people will broke this paradox about
the stereotype
about the culinary quality, which is very important for the other producers also. Our region is there are many, many people producing cornelon, and they are kind of tracked on this low quality chain. And
it's a vicious circle.
Yeah, like a vicious circle. We are trying to break it.
I'm really curious to know how your clients will receive this news.
Well, I did it already knowing that some of the customers were eager to receive specialty cornelon.
They're expecting that already.
They are already expecting. And the price I bought it, which is already, I think it should be inspiring for the rest of Brazil. I paid 3 times more than the market price.
That would be?
I don't remember. That's my problem, actually. My biggest problem is that I always forget the price.
You won't run away, baby.
No, those who know me, those who really know me, they know that's my story, because every time they go to my, for example, to my place in Moscow, they say, oh, how much did you pay for this piece of equipment? And I said, I don't remember. I enjoyed it once and I don't remember the price anymore.
I'm kidding.
I'm just enjoying things I bought. So anyway, my idea when I was talking to Lucas from Venturim is that to try to introduce this coffee at a fair price based on its flavor, and to set up a certain level of price that would make it possible to keep providing this kind of coffees into the market in the future, in the coming years. I don't think it's going to be just one step, but I believe it should be an important signal for those farmers who would asking me, like, what should I do to make my coffee better? Shall you pay me more? Instead of fantasies about it, I would just buy it and show the example. And those customers who are already asking about it in Russia, they are waiting for this coffee and they really want to promote it because of the flavor and because of the real, really good price in a good sense. Truly valuable things cannot be cheap. I would say it's even bad if you're trying to sell something really valuable at a too little price. So I'm looking for a fair market for that.
Are you aware that you are starting a little revolution in the coffee industry? Because some might listen to this interview and laugh at us, but maybe in some years they would be just respecting us very much, talking about high prices for our specialty cornelon.
Well, this is nothing new to me. Imagine 2011 when I began imports of coffee. No, 2006 when I began in the coffee in general. Many people who are owning huge roasteries right now in Russia were not kind of laughing at me, but teaching me, like, hey, baby, do you know what a business is? Business is you buy it at $5 per kg, sell it at $50 per kg, and this is business. Are you telling me roastery is a business? So that was the kind of talk like back 12 years ago. Nowadays, we're talking different things. It just takes time. And revolutions, well, Russia is notorious for revolutions, right?
Oh my goodness. Let's not go in this path, okay?
No.
So for those who's a little bit more open-minded or at least curious with our conversation, what would be your advices based on your experiences buying specialty cornelon from Brazil?
What would be my recommendation to them?
Yes.
That's hard to really give any recommendation, but the easiest thing, I think, is really talk to your customers. That's probably a way to learn something more. Or let them try things, depending on whether there is the right moment for it or not. I definitely feel that cornelon today, at least in Brazil, it only offers maybe 1% of its real potential. I have tried some really fantastic cornelons from, let's say, the Philippines, and that's a super great coffee, super fruity and very durable in storage, and it has a lot to offer. And look at what is going on in Arabicas right now. It's a mess. So you are looking for a farmer, you're looking for relationships, you're looking for flavors, you're trying to offer something new, and you have to stay interesting to your own customers for some reason. And some of them might actually love the flavors of cornelon, some of them might need more caffeine. Just talk to them, who knows? I was just thinking about this whole thing about pioneering and being number one with the cornelon, and I usually spend my summer holidays going to some hikes to the far north or extreme to the mountains. And the funny fact is that when you're traveling as a group, if you're number one on that route, you can actually see the whole picture. But if you're just number two or number three, the only thing you can see is someone's feet walking in front of you. So it depends on you, which kind of person you want to be. In the front, in the middle, or maybe somewhere in the back.
Let's make a revolution, guys!
Coffee, 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 co